Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the World of Ink Network, founded in 2011 by Virginia Grenier and Marcia Cook. Their vision was to start a radio show that helped writers reach their dreams. The World of Ink has a wonderful group of hosts who are dedicated to delivering shows to entertain and inspire listeners. The World of Ink Network shares resources that introduce tips, products, and services to help strengthen, support, and challenge those who love writing and the written word. Their hope is to bring not only authors, illustrators, and publishers together, but screenwriters, directors, and producers. New to the network will be a variety of special shows, bringing not only entertaining shows, but informative discussions on timely subjects. To learn more about us, go to www.worldofinknetwork.com or visit us on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Thank you for your support and enjoy the show.
Good afternoon, everybody. Hi, it's Marcia Cook, and it's Good Story is a Good Story, and from the World of Ink Network, and we have great guests today, as always, and this is probably, I'm not going to be doing Thursdays anymore. I'll be going back to my Tuesday nights starting in the fall, although I may be doing a show with Virginia next Thursday. So as we know, we never know when I'm going to show up. I say I'm not working, but then I will be, but I'm going to try to like finish my writing and start in September, but it's almost September, so I'm not sure about that yet, so we'll see. But anyway, we've got a great show, and I'm going to bring them out right away, because Jack Remick is here, who's been here many times, and he brings us wonderful people, and he's brought us Eleanor Parker, and so we'll let Jack come on. Hi, Jack. How are you?
Hi, Marcia. How are you doing?
I'm fine. I'm so glad to have you here. You bring us such wonderful guests.
You're changing days then, is that right?
Well, Tuesday was my day, and then I took Thursday. I thought, well, maybe I'll change to Thursday, but then I said, no, I'm so used to Tuesdays for the last 5 years, so I mean, I went back to Tuesdays. But, we do sporadic shows different times, you know. We just kind of play some sometimes, depending, you know. But I'm probably going to go back to Tuesday nights, and we'll see how that goes.
Thank you for having us on this today. This is a real treat to talk to Ellie, you know. I've only written back and forth to her.
Hi, Ellie. I'll call you Ellie, too, then, right?
Yes, absolutely. Hi.
Oh, okay, good.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Marcia. Nice talking to you finally, Jack.
That's good. Yeah, you have a voice. You know, I expected a West Virginia accent.
I know you said that. No, I don't have an accent at all.
I know. It's wonderful, you know.
I know, because you never know. You really don't know if you don't talk to someone. I mean, people don't even know where I'm. They think I'm from New York, and I'm not. I'm from Chicago. But then some people say they hear the Chicago accent, and I don't think we have an accent. Nobody ever does. I think they have an accent.
Yeah,
they,
exactly.
They just think they sound like who they sound like. But, you know, that's like a funny thing. That's really what's funny about it is, and when you don't talk to people from Facebook and sometimes you hear them, it is very different. You know,
when you
imagine them one way, and then it's like it's like when you're dating, you know, you have a blind date or something, and then you're talking to them and they're like wonderful or bad. If they were usually bad on the phone, they were great when you saw them. If they were great on the phone, it was not the best date. But what can you do? Anyway, we're all here, we're on the radio, and it's going to be fun. And I think I opened the chat room, but I'm not sure if Eleanor, why don't you starting a little and say what you do and who you are and what you've been doing lately.
Okay.
So we'll do that first.
Okay, all right. I'm Puerto Rican born. I was born in Ponce, Puerto Rico, and I was the daughter of a sergeant major, so we moved around quite a bit. Lived overseas 5 times, I believe, before the age of 18, so I've pretty much gone back and forth across the Atlantic. I was a social worker. I've been a social worker, counselor, alternative health practitioner, refugee worker in my adult life, and a painter. I was a painter for 25 years before I discovered my love of writing books. I'd written poetry to myself, just for myself, and I never really published anything. And I discovered a book by Julia Cameron, The Artist's Way. And I read it I did a chapter a month for a year, and then the following year I invited 7 or 8 friends, I can't remember, to do it with me. And through facilitating this workshop for these wonderful, very talented people in, of all walks of life, they encouraged me to really put my money where my mouth was, because this is all about creativity. And they knew I was thinking about a book, and they encouraged me to write A Decent Woman, which I did, which is set in 1900 Puerto Rico, 19th century Puerto Rico. And it's a story of Anna Belen, who is an Afro-Cuban midwife who has secrets. And it's really the story of women and friends and friendship and loyalty that women seem to have in their tight-knit groups.
That's how you met Jack.
Yes, well, my first book manager was Mindy Halleck, who read my manuscript, and immediately she wrote back and said, you need to meet Jack, and you need to read this book. Well, you don't need to meet. You need to read this book first, is what she said. And it was Gabriella and the Widow. And I tell you, I was blown away. I think the entire book is highlighted. I've never read a book that had moved me so deeply, and the writing just really blew me away. And I wrote a comment on his blog about the book, and then I reviewed it, and from there, and then Jack, you know, thanked me. It was very gracious, and that's how it started. And he's since then, I think he knows it, but I've always said he's my mentor, officially or not.
He's a lot of people's mentor. He doesn't realize that, you know, because he's a wonderful writer, and he used to do exercises for writers and things like that. And you know, when he was on with Joanne Buchanan, remember when you did that? Yeah, and that's how you met a lot of us. And because you're so interesting, and you just do a lot of different things. You're not you've done a lot.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself that have not listened to a show with you in it, you know, with the on it. So let's hear about you, Jack.
Yeah.
Yes,
well,
you, of course.
Okay, I'm not very good about talking about myself. So
neither am I. I know.
I'm just very short.
We could do very short. Okay.
I might get halfway through in half an hour, so you have to bear with me.
Well, we'll listen.
I started out as a poet. Very early on, had some success, and then it took me a long, long time after that initial success to realize that it was very important to be what I would call a high-craft writer. So I spent a long time working at language and style, and had written several novels. I finally connected with a magazine back in Youngstown, Ohio, called Pig Iron Press, and I started writing for them, wrote introductions, and every 3 or 4 months I had to write a 50-page novella, which really pushed me to the limits because I was trying to do other things at the same time. They published my first novel called The Stolen House, which is characterized by its first novelness, you know, as being naive and sophomoric, but nevertheless it's there and I don't deny it. From there I jumped on to writing more poetry, had more success there. And then in 1992 I met Bob Ray. Bob Ray introduced me to Natalie Goldberg. Natalie Goldberg introduced me to timed writing. Bob and I worked together on that timed writing to produce something we called structured timed writing, which was a more pointed and directed way of using the clock to produce material. After that time, my work just sort of sprang out, and I was able to, I think I have 16 books out, something like that. Lost track because I think there's 16. And they all grow out of this timed writing, structured timed writing notion. My poetry book, all of those poems were written under the clock. All of my prose is written under the clock. My memoirs are written under the clock. At the moment, I'm connected with Coffeetown Press. When I met Catherine Treadgold through a poet, she really wanted to publish Blood, which was one of the first of the breakout novels that I had. And I said, okay, I've got these ideas. And she said, I'll publish everything you write. And she has. So I connected really with a marvelous, marvelous editor and publisher who has given me a lot of leeway, for which I'm very thankful. And I'm thankful to three people. Well, my wife excluded, but Bob Ray, okay. Natalie Goldberg, and Catherine Fred Gold. All of those people were very, very important in my development as an artist and as a writer. And so when I met Ellie through Mindy, that way, Mindy Halleck, who was at Book Trope 2, I, you know, was by that time very, very, well, two things. I was impressed with Ellie's writing and the story itself, having written a book about Latin American women. But also, it was very important to me, as someone who has benefited so much from other writers and teachers, to be able to pass on what I know and knew to other writers. And that's how I connected with Ellie. When I reviewed her novel, A Decent Woman, it took me a long time to review it because I had to satisfy in my own mind a bigger question of what's the difference between a novel and an historical novel.
Right.
And now that I have her on the line, I would like Ellie to take a dig at answering that question. Because when I reviewed A Decent Woman, you know, I saw so much there that needed to be written about outside the novel in the review, which I did. But I still don't think that I satisfied the basic requirement of answering my own question, what is an historical novel? Can you take a stab at it, Ellie?
Well, I tell you, you know, this was my debut novel. I started out, and I just wrote this book 6 months. I wrote it, and I didn't really know the ins and outs. I didn't know, to tell you the truth, I didn't know what I was doing. I just had a story to tell, and I told it.
That's probably a lot better. That's a lot better. Once you start knowing what you're doing, then it gets harder. Then you can't choose. It's tough because then you're thinking, is it good enough?
I was naive enough and really naive, and I don't think I realized, you know, what I was doing, what I was taking on. It was a story that had to be told. There were stories that they were, you know, a lot of oral stories, oral storytelling in my family. So I didn't even think of it as historical until my third editor came up with the genre. And I said, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. This takes place in 1900. And that's really the first time. And so really, I had a hard time as well. And when I read your review, which was fabulous, I'm so honored that you wrote that, Jack. It was just an incredible, incredible review. You saw things that I didn't even see. That's my own book.
That's the role of the reviewer, isn't it, is to take your unconscious material and sort of levitate it out of the darkness onto the page.
Exactly. Well, you did that impeccably.
Well, not many reviewers can do that, and not many reviewers, you know, and like you know, and Fran Lewis, and you two both, you know, because you get right to the, you go right for whatever's necessary for people to know, and most reviewers don't do that. They don't.
I think a reviewer has an obligation to the writer not to say, oh, this is good or I like it. I mean, anybody can say that, but it seems to me, I've been reading some stuff by Eric Kandel, the neuroscientist, who has a fabulous book called The Age of Insight, when he talks about Kokoschka and Klimt and Sheila, the three major Viennese painters at that time. And he said they actually reinvented painting in a way that required the viewer to complete the work. Now, that
was
a new concept to me.
Yeah.
And I look at, you know, if you look at a Greek statue, well, it's there, and it doesn't care if you're there or not. But these guys painted their paintings such that they demand that you be there to complete the work for them. And I think that's part of a reviewer's job with the written word is to sort of, you know, complete the cycle. I mean, it's written for a reason. Mm-hmm. It's written to expose a certain aspect of our kindness, our weakness, of our hatred, our on and on like that. And that's the reviewer's job, not just to say, oh, I like this, it's really good. That doesn't do anybody any
good. Yes,
right.
That's very true.
Right. And well, Amazon is, I think Amazon right now is changing some of the things that they're doing because of that. You know, because everybody says, like, they have like 100 reviews. I like this book. It's the most wonderful book. And this, and then people are reading some of these books and they're not. And Amazon, I think, has been taking off some of the wrong people, unfortunately, because some of the people that I know that are, their reviews are being taken off. I don't, nobody knows why. I mean, so they're deciding what goes on, and that's very bad because some of these people are really good reviewers.
Oh, yeah. See, I think that what happens is a reviewer who takes the time to see what a book is about and to write about it, and granted, we're all going to miss some things. Yeah, I mean, it just...
Everybody sees it, reads it a different way anyway.
But what it does is it raises the level of discourse. And when you got an artful book like A Decent Woman that is both stylistically artful, structurally artful, you know, story-wise is artful. I mean, it's a complex and wonderful flowing book with all kinds of things in it. You can't just toss it off. You know, you have to raise the level of discourse so that that novel enters into the stream of discourse. And it's unfortunate that I don't find many reviewers actually doing that.
Oh, that's not, they don't do that. They absolutely don't do that. But the people that are reading the books, sometimes when you really have a good review, that really helps them know if they really want to read this book. And if they were thinking that, because a lot of times when you say historical, because I've had several historical romance shows lately, and it's a very thorough, and it's a you have to really know you have to know what you're doing. You just can't make it up. I mean, it's fiction, but you also, everything has to be right. The period, everything, it's a period piece. And even in the movies, unfortunately, when I was screenwriting, when I was an agent, I still, you know, have an agency, but I haven't been taking clients right now. But they all say, oh, we don't want historical romance. We don't want because... You know, you have to be loyal to the person that's writing the book when you put that on the screen and when it's in a book. This is the truth. I mean, this is not like, you know, you're making up a short novella. It's not, that's not any way or any form like that.
That's true. It is true. I think I had a hard time, actually, when I queried agents, out of 100 agents, I think I queried, they were 10 or 12 that wrote back immediately and wanted, you know, one chapter, five chapters. Well, and they loved it, but they kept saying, it's really hard to sell a historical novel.
Exactly,
and I said, well, it's not, you know, I said, it's not a romance now, you know, there's a murder, there's a rape, you know, there's crime. And they said, I know, that's why I love you.
Yeah, see, the thing, you know what the problem is that when they put you on Amazon or when people are talking about books, some books don't classify just in, like if you say romance, that doesn't mean that it's just romance. I mean, things happen when, you know, people don't stay in bed all day long. They got to get out of bed and do something, you know, with their lives. But,
Well, I think a good historical novel to me is seamless. Any novel, really, but historical, you know, it has the timeline, it has the culture, everything that's going on, the little details, the language, but it has to be seamless. It's almost like I told my French teacher, if I smell grammar, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
So, you know, make it fun, and we'll be fine, you know.
Well,
so
that's why I had, you know, that's one of the genres that I was not that familiar with. That's why I've had several shows, Lee Michaels, who does a lot of it. And she was a Harlequin writer at the beginning, and she's got like 100 books, but she does historical romance really well. And, you know, and when she was on, what I was saying was when I listened to her book on a tape, I was so surprised how sexy, and it was just as sexy as the books now that are erotic romance, but it's not classified that way.
Right.
You know, and there's a lot of sex in it. I mean, I was so shocked. I went, oh my God, there's really a lot. and it's thorough sex because it's very detailed.
Can I ask Ellie why the publisher didn't categorize it as women's fiction? See, that it's that historical thing sticks in there.
That's That's a good question. We did, Jack. We did. Mindy was my book manager at the very beginning, And we wanted women's fiction, historical fiction, of course. We wanted, what was the other one? I can't think even what the heck the other one is. Oh my God, it totally escapes me. But women's fiction was one. And I don't know why that didn't work. I can't really tell you why that didn't work, but it was one that we really wanted, because I didn't want it to be pigeonholed, you know, in one genre. Because
that's one of the problems. See, that's it. Yeah, see, that's
true,
the problem.
Because there's a feminist slant to the book as well, and that's why I wanted to open it up to women's fiction. I thought it would be a good place for it, but for whatever reason we didn't get that. So
well, but yeah, you know what you could do? You could put it in the is it in the description? You can. They can add.
You know, no, it's not. It's not.
Then you can add that.
Idea.
You should add that. Add that in, because
I will.
You know, you can put more. See, I think, you know, I've seen some of the descriptions. You can add some things that people don't think they should add, and if you want them to know that, then put that in, because maybe it'll pick it up the tag word. Yeah, they can add it.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I will do that. Thank you.
I'm filled with ideas. I'm filled with ideas.
You are.
I have another question for Ellie.
Yeah.
What has been the spinoff of your book for your life and your writing life? I know that you're involved in the Latina Authors and Their Muses anthology. Can you tell us something about that?
I can. I'm in an anthology called Latina Authors and Their Muses, and this comes out. It's edited by Myra Calvani. It will come out in, I think it's December. So I'm very excited about that. There are 40 Latina authors from Esmeralda Santiago to Dalma Figueroa. There's lots of wonderful, wonderful writers. I'm very excited about that. I was really honored to be the 40th. There were 39, and Myra kept saying, "I'm waiting for your book. I'm waiting for your book."
You know what? Why don't you see if some of them want to come on the show? I'll have a show for your, you know, when you debut your book. I'll be happy to have a show if they want to come in. You know, and the thing is, I've tempted a lot of things, but I can't take 40. I've done 5.
I understand.
But I don't think I can
will
do
tell
40.
Myra. I understand. Yeah, she's lovely. Myra's lovely.
Right.
She's an author. Go ahead.
Sorry. Right. Yeah.
Okay. And as I understand it.
And Jack, one second. Jack, why don't you come on too? Because it'll be all women authors. That'd be good. You'll fit right in.
Well, I think there's too many guys and not enough women. So I'll pass on that one. I'll pick it up another time. But let me ask you this, Ellie. Is she taking a piece of your novel in that anthology?
I'm sorry. I keep interrupting you. I'm not used to 3 people on a phone call. It's their interviews. She's interviewed each of us with questions that are geared towards our work, our life experiences, questions about writing, our style, how we come up with characters, questions about our childhoods, whether we grew up in literary families or not. So they're wonderful questions, very, very, you know, very interesting questions. I really enjoyed answering Myra's questions. Yeah, so it was very well done, very well done.
I may have missed this earlier, but what is the range of that? When you say Latina, does it go from Chile to Yakima? How do you determine that particular, you know, that someone is in fact a Latina author?
That's interesting, too. I was just recently reading an article about the differences between Latina, mentioning someone's Latina or Hispanic, and they didn't even really come up with anything, so it really is interchangeable. The authors have roots in Mexico, Chile, Argentina, the Caribbean, Puerto Rico, Cuba. We have a Venezuelan author, Spanish, in Spain, so really from everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. That's very interesting.
Well,
Marcia, have you
thought about or have you interviewed Latina authors before? Because my read is that this is a huge, huge group of people for whom writing is not necessarily new, because a fabulous number of Latin American authors are, you know, Hispanic authors. But
yes, of course.
As we're progressing through the cultural revolution that's taking place, it would seem to me that this would
be that's why I want to, that's why I'd love to do it, right? And you know, that's the thing about when we said, you know, when you're listening to our beginning of our promotion, we are doing different shows. I am certainly doing different shows because I want to do different, you know, after 5 or 6 years of doing shows, you know, I want to have different topics that I have not had before, and so that's why I'm always interested, as you know, Jack, which is why you bring people to us that are great, because sometimes you don't get to meet people until somebody introduces you. You know, even on Facebook, when it first started, you could make introductions. It's not like that now because I don't know what happened to Facebook. It's like, you know, some people say, like, do you have shows? They don't see all of it, and they don't give it, they don't send them out, right? We have no idea where things are going these years, and it's changed a lot. So, right, before we used to go, oh, I have a friend, you want to be introduced to them, and then you could get introduced, and it was a whole new world, but it's not like that now. It's very different.
I think Ellie would be an ideal person because, you know, to sort of break the ice there.
Yeah, I think it's great. Absolutely.
I think it should be important.
Ellie, then you have to give up your writing time to organize.
No, that's not going to happen.
She gives me the names. I'll organize it for her.
There you go.
I don't make my guests do that. I handle it. Well, you know what, though? I do like to talk to people. I'm glad that I did get to talk to Ellie first. You know, the thing is, a lot of times, you know, sometimes I can't speak to them, but I really like to because I think if I talk to them first, I have some idea what they're like, and then we can have a good conversation. And because sometimes, you know, during the conversation, things come up, but you feel like you know them, you know,
exactly.
And I still like that part of it. And I do that a lot because I will definitely be happy to talk to anybody that wants to talk to me. And I'll arrange it, you know, but I think you're right, Jack. This is an area that's not really been touched as much.
I think it is.
One other question about this whole thing with A Decent Woman. You mentioned in one of your emails that your publisher had turned down a translation of the book.
Can you
go into that for us and tell us what's going on there?
If you can't, you don't have to, you know, is that something you want to talk about?
No. Well, you know, and I appreciate the question, and yeah, it is. It's a big part of my life right now because I was real excited, and Decent Woman had great, you know, had a nice welcome and wonderful reviews, and I had always written the book with doing the Spanish translation shortly after, and I have a friend, actually my cousin, was already signed up to help me. She's a wonderful writer herself, and her best friend is a professor of Latin American of languages in Puerto Rico, the University of Puerto Rico, and so I already had everyone lined up to do this, and I pitched it, thinking that it would be a no-brainer with the Latin American audience and how many readers there. I just don't think they. Just don't know if they realize how huge this market is.
Yeah.
And I did not receive a really...
You know, I would do anything to have any of my books. I would do anything to have any of my books in Spanish or whatever. I cannot believe that because it's such a big market and it's a great market.
It is a great market.
Is your book on... there's different... I don't know if you know this. You probably do. But there's different Amazons in all different countries.
Yes, you know that? Actually, I Googled myself one night... I'm just curious where else Amazon, and I was in Japan, Germany,
they're everywhere.
Spain, France, everywhere. So, yes, I saw that.
And you have to put them on separately, though. That's the problem. You have to go in and put it on separately a lot of times. And I think you as an author can do that even if you're published with a publisher. Because
I never did that. I didn't do that. I just basically Googled my name and all this popped up. So it does pop up, but
you have to go in and you can put your page. There's something that you can do once you go in. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it takes a little work, but you can. You have to go in, and I had trouble, like, putting it in because it's in Spanish. I really didn't know what I was doing, and I tried.
I can help you there.
Because I think it's a huge market, and I agree with you,
it
Jack.
Is.
And, you know, I think every market is huge, and everybody.
Have you, have you given up? You haven't given up on the translation.
No, not at all. We're going ahead with the translation, and I'm going to, I have plans to approach two university presses in Texas.
Absolutely, yeah.
Actually published a lot of Latina authors. So I'm not giving up. Thank you for the question.
No, you shouldn't give up. No, you know, and that's, you know, there are some, you know, sometimes out there, it's not as easy as people think, and this is one of the other things. If you go with a small publisher, or if you go with a large publisher, or if you publish itself, it's a good book is a good book, and a good story is a good story. And regardless of how you have to get it out there, I believe it should be out there. So don't cut yourself short if it's not working with one place. You could always, you know, so indie publishing is not a bad thing because you are in control of yourself.
Right.
You know, and sometimes you need it. Sometimes you need to be in control.
One more thing. And then, you know, then I'm through with my questions.
Well, we're not, that means the show is over. You can keep talking.
No, I love your questions.
Are you at a place in your writing of your work in progress that you could give us a paragraph or two?
Oh, goodness. I would have to pull that up, but I definitely would love to do that. Let me see. I wasn't prepared.
All right. I'll talk with Jack while you look for it.
I can find it. Don't you worry. I'll find it.
Okay. You know, Jack, you know as well as I do, you know, it's like, there are so many avenues for people now that there weren't years ago, and they're good avenues. You know, and the problem is if you don't have 50 reviews and you don't, you know, have a claim that you want, still keep writing. I mean, I've been talking about this for the last 20 years. Don't stop, because you never know who will see your book that really loves it and something wonderful can happen. But beside that, you meet all these authors. And so don't stop doing your writing because somebody says, I won't do this or I can't do that. You know, I don't believe in that.
Well,
no, it's not a good answer.
I think somebody much wiser than I said that the successful writer...
Is there anybody wiser than you?
The word that describes a successful... There are three words to describe the successful writer. Perseverance.
Yeah,
and
there you go.
It's just that plain, you know. I mean, if you keep at it, you know, you never know what will happen. And there's some pretty smart people out there, you know, who are willing to take the time to develop a craft and an art, develop the story, instead of just trashing it out. You know, one of the things, I'm going to go into a gripe right now, okay?
Uh-oh.
One of the things that is sweeping the industry right now and is making me very nervous is how much alike all the covers of books look, even though they're different. You know, look at any romance cover book, and it's like they've all gone to the same press and done the same thing.
Yeah.
If you look at the mystery books, they all... And I think that's partly the result of the Amazon world, which at the same time that it gives readers outlets that they would never have had in a million years, you know, it also puts them into some kind of a mold and a press and squeezes them all out so they look and sound the same.
Because I think, Jack, you know, one of the problems that you face is that people say they want different, but they want the same. And that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that is what happens because they go, you know, like it's anything else, you know, you think you're different. And then they go, well, that's not good. So, you know, they just want the same. Even in the movies, it's the same thing, you know. And if you do something different, you know, and get out there, you're lucky. You know, that's the thing.
Well, let me add something here on this how to... I'm always looking for ways to promote my work. And I ran into a woman named Rachel Funkheller, who's in Hawaii, and she happened to have read my blog, Bob's blog and my blog, and our book, The Weekend Novelist, Weekend Novelist Writes a Mystery. And she and I have been in touch, and she told me about this little company called Logotech that will take a copy of your book, and it will put it on a PDF, put that into a flash drive. And they have flash drives that look like credit cards and everything.
Yeah, that's what you were talking about last time. I saw that. I didn't know what... All right, so it's...
They put it in
a flash drive, and then what do you do with that? You give it to somebody, or...?
Well, here's the thing.
I'm
going off to Utah at the League of Utah Writers conference to I give three workshops, and they said, bring books, bring books, bring books. So I'm bringing books, and part of my way to market is to say, okay, buy a book, and I'll give you a PDF of Pacific Coast Highway free.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I introduced them to two works at the same time. It, you know, costs a little bit, but that's part of promotion, isn't it? That's the way
yeah,
you
it
promote.
Is. Yeah,
it does cost you a little bit to do it. And besides that, it's this cute little flash drive that looks like a book.
It is. I have one.
Yeah. Okay. So it's Logotech. Logotech. You know. Yeah.
Logotech.
That's a
Logotech. Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, there's so many new things. I mean, you know, and because we're doing this for so many years, I mean, that sounds like something very interesting. And also the audio book. I really like the Audibles. I love it because I think people should use this if they want to write. If they want to learn how to write really well, I think if you listen to someone else's book, you hear every word, okay? When you're reading, you tend to skip it.
Yeah, that brings me to something that, you know, Marshall McLuhan came up with back in the 60s. He wrote a book called The Medium is the Message and Understanding Media, and he divided it into two categories, cool and hot. And he said, TV is a cool medium, books are a hot medium. Well, what makes them hot? You have to generate the images from the words in TV or film. The images are already generated for you. So the audiobook seems to work halfway in between.
Yeah.
You know, it's you're engaging in it because you still have to provide the images, but it's like somebody reading it to you. So, you know, there's something there.
I think it's a newer. I think people are going to really get into that, and I think that it really, you know, it used to like books on tape. It was like that too. But the thing is that when you hear the words, sometimes even in your own work, because Virginia called me up after I sent her my No Clues, No Shoes, my children's, which the children's is going to be a tougher market for that. But she heard it and she went, "Oh my God, I read the book." But it was just so different, and it was great. I mean, it's really a different experience. So I think that when people are reading or trying to learn sometimes, I think it's a good way because you hear how they start the chapters, you hear just different words, and, you know, because sometimes I think people have a problem, authors definitely do, on how to start a chapter, how to end a chapter, where your reader will figure out what you've left out. You know, because that's a problem for writers. You know, I think it is.
That right there is a big topic that's worth a whole show, Marcia.
Okay,
that's
true.
Ellie, did you find the passage you want to give us?
Yeah, she's going to
Yes,
do
I do. I have it. I have it.
Okay,
go ahead.
All right, here we go. March 1920, Isla de Cabras. It began as a sound in the darkness before dawn. Ethereal place between slumber and release when dreamers stirred slightly, desperately struggling to remain conscious mind to remain before conscious mind awakened to the realization of the sheer agony of their existence. Eight exiled men and women awoke, their ears and attention pricked to the familiar lone sound of a distressed motor chugging in the distance. Those who were able to dress without assistance hurriedly did so and exited the austere stone, brick, and cement building in silence. In single file, the dark figures followed the rocky path to the north side of the island in silence. As they passed the small cemetery, a young man ran a stick across the wooden picket fence separating the quarantine facility from the rest of the island and sounded like a flag whipping about and snapping in high winds. When the exiled reached the harbor on the craggy northern shoreline, they turned to face the lighthouse across San Juan Bay, and beyond that, the Spanish-erected fortification of El Castillo de San Felipe del Morro. On that morning, the fortress, barely visible in the hazy distance, resembled a ghostly, beguiling castle on a cliff. The others would be along just in time to greet the ship and any new patients aboard. Yet the lepers in quarantine would remain isolated for as long as necessary. From the ocean, Isla de Cabras, measuring 1.6 kilometers, I still don't know how to do that one yet, in length and nearly 1 kilometer wide, appeared uninhabited despite a grouping of buildings haphazardly constructed of brick and stone, which included a dispensary, a disinfection facility, the lodge where Fray Ignacio lived, and a large wooden warehouse. A natural barrier of rocks and rough surf made the southern side of the island, facing San Juan, unapproachable by boat. Only a 5-mile stretch of land separated the suffering inhabitants of Isla de Cabras from El Morro Fortress at the foot of San Juan Harbor. But in reality, they were a world apart, for they could never leave the leprosarium run by the Spanish priest and Fray Ignacio and Sor Imelda.
Wow.
That's the foreword.
Wow.
My goodness. Wow.
Yeah. You are an intense group. Yeah.
There were leper colonies on Puerto Rico.
Yeah. There you go.
How far along are you in the book?
I have 15 chapters.
Okay.
15 chapters in. I'm very happy with it.
It's good.
It's a tough write. I have to.
Well, that's okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
Take your time and get it right. Yeah. That's the best way to go.
I think it's just the feeling. The writing is not difficult, but I think putting ourselves in our characters can sometimes, it's very sad. It's depressing. It's very sad.
It can be exhausting. Even if you're writing a comedy, you're in a different mode, and then you have to get out of that mode and be in the world. I said to my husband the other night, I don't understand how I can keep working all day long. I'm always other people that aren't writers, maybe, or even writers, I don't know, they maybe just do other things, but writers, we're always thinking. If we're not working at a computer in our minds, or we're taking notes, or, you know, I said the other day, if we're in a show, I'd start taking notes in the dark, you know, because it's just something, my thoughts come in. But it's like, you have to do this all the time because it's part of you. It's the part of you, and it is exhausting sometimes, very much, I think.
Okay, gives me, Marcia's comments there give me another question. I thought I was through with my question, but I have one more. You go to your river place as often as possible. Is that correct?
Yes,
summer,
I do.
Like
I do.
You find that milieu, not environment, you know, that the ambiance, if you want to say that word.
Yeah,
Is that inducive to something, or is that... does that lead you to something as a writer, or how do you use that time and space to free yourself from the demands of the, you know, the cars and the telephone calls? Because you don't have phone there, do you?
Yeah, I take my cell phone. It's a little place on the Potomac River, on the west side, on the West Virginia side of the Potomac River, and it's in a busy complex, but I go during the week mostly, and there's no one there. I take my dog, my cat, my laptop, my books. We have no internet. There's no TV. Radio doesn't work. I think I only get one country station, which I'm sorry, but I don't like country music that much. So it's very easy to get in that mood. Yeah, and I love the water. I mean, I was born in Puerto Rico, so I love get energy from the water and from nature. So that's my place, definitely.
When you go to, if you go to Starbucks, you go to places, it's not quite like that. I mean, it's a little different when you write in those kind of places. But you know what, though? I had this Mary McNear on last week, and she writes Butternut Lake series, trilogy. Mm-hmm. And I listened to it's so good. When I said to her, I said, you know, I feel like I want to be there, because it was just so, you know, there wasn't, she wasn't talking about movies. She wasn't talking about TV in the books. You know, it's a life. And it's actually, she was, you know, having conversations with people that were just about things that had happened in the past, you know, and things are happening forward, but not about, you know, what show are you watching, or are you, you know, it's like we're all so right now, but certainly because when we're binge watching on, you know, all the new shows and all the series, our life changes. Mm-hmm. It's like you go, like, how many series could there be where there's all these episodes, and how can you keep watching them? You know,
I gave up TV about 2 years ago. I have no cable at home in my home. So I just can't, I just love it. I love the peace and quiet. I love just being alone with my characters and seeing where they lead me.
Well, that's why you can write that way. That's why you can write that way.
It's true.
I mean, you're not sitting at Starbucks watching everybody going, you know, by the time they're done with their drinks, it's like $6 a drink, and, you know, and you're going like, oh, you know, can they invent any more things that go in the coffee? I mean, it's, you know.
It is interesting to people watch, though. It's nice to watch people in these places, though.
Right. Well, that's what I do.
People watcher. Right. I like to watch how they hold their drink and who they talk to and what are they thinking about. And so that's fun, too. But that's
okay, so do you think that I spill my drink? What does that mean? Spill it all the time. Every time, you know, and
I'll be watching you.
Okay. What does that say about me? We'll let Jack answer that. We won't let Jack answer that. He's read my writing, okay? So that's why. Jack, where do you go to write? Besides your workshops.
Oh, well, what am I writing?
Where do you go? Where do you go to write? I mean, do you write at home?
Well, I have my workspace at home with the computers, but I use the whole house, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I know this, but my wife is also an artist. She's a quilt artist.
Yeah.
Well
oh,
known,
yeah, that's right.
World famous kind of thing. You know, she goes off to quilt shows and gives courses and stuff like that. So she locks herself in her quilt place where she cuts quilts and make noises and stuff like that. And I sort of move around the house. But on Tuesdays and Fridays, I go to Louisa's Bakery Cafe,
right,
where we have been writing for a long time. And there are still people who show up. I think on Tuesday we had 9 writers.
That's
which
good.
Is pretty good for summertime.
Yeah, summertime.
But I look at it sort of, I'd like it sort of to discuss process here for a minute. I was looking around for a metaphor for the modern writing experience. And through time, I have come to think that the art is really in the rewrite. I mean, you get an idea and you write it down and stuff. But it's in the rewrite that you really begin to find both the essence and the structure of your work.
Yeah.
And
right.
So I was looking for a metaphor. And I said, well, what am I doing here? Well, Bob and I, when we wrote the mystery book, he phoned me one day and he said, what is chapter 3? I mean, what is chapter 3? What's the third, you know, what's the third part? The part 3, what act 3? And without any hesitation, I said, act 3 is a template for rewriting act 1. And this gave us a huge insight, well, what stays, what remains at the end of your book in act 3? Well, where does the object come in? Where is its first appearance? Where is its second, third, fourth? So this gives this whole new thing. Well, I began.
You go back and forth like I do when I'm writing. I start writing and then I go back because then I want to make sure that I didn't forget anything. And then I ended up changing it and putting more in, you know. And that's why it takes me so long a lot of times because I find out so much about my characters that way.
Yeah. Well, so the metaphor that I finally came up with was a Möbius strip. And if you think about a Möbius strip, it has no beginning, it has no end, it has no inner, it has the outer becomes the inner. Well, that suggested to me this continuing process of creation, analysis, recreation, reanalysis, recreation, reanalysis. And so it became then a very fluid process for me. And that shows up, well, you've read Gabriella the Widow. That shows up in the way the objects keep coming back. They just, each of the objects becomes a character almost. Well, if you see it as this Möbius strip, then you never have to fight. You never have to fight because you're always in it.
That's true.
Right.
No, it is true.
Well, that's a good way to look at it because I'm always in it.
That's the way I use Louisa's. I go to Louisa's and I'll write a scene, and then I'll go home. And I use dictation now because my typing is so bad that I have to dictate my own writing. And so I dictate it then, and then as I have dictated, I go back and I work it. And it's almost like, you know, painting. It's this whole thing. So Louisa's to me becomes a source for the product, and the rest of the week becomes the process for guiding that little product out of the darkness. And Bob Ray and I work scenes 2 days a week, so I get a constant feedback about whether it's working or not. I don't know if we talked about this before, but I talk about hooks and links. And Marcia, you said, how does a chapter end, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the good writer links that, hooks that to the next scene, maybe down the road. Maybe it's not the very next scene, but there's something in that end of that
scene
that hooks you to the one way down the street. Well, pretty soon you've got a chain there, and they call that, so we've got hooks and links. And
that's
so
right. That's a good way to look at it, right? Because it is what it is. It's just, you know, that's why that's why I was saying that, you know, it's harder than it looks, because it just doesn't happen, you know, and that's the thing. And sometimes, you know, I write a lot of times longhand, and then when I do the longhand, then I go, when I'm on the computer, I rework the whole, it's completely different, but at least I have some idea of what I was thinking at the time. Because even when you write a book, like, when I've noticed this, especially in the audio, when you listen to your book on an audio, you go like, who wrote that? And where was, I don't even know what I was thinking when I wrote that book. I'm thinking like, where did that come from? You know, who wrote this? You know, it's like, because you don't, you feel so removed because you might have done it 5 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever. And you go like, what could have made me think like that? You know, you don't, that's
well, you,
the fun
you get
of
in
writing.
A zone. Yeah, you get in a zone sometimes.
That's why I love this so much.
You know, or maybe it's Natalie Goldberg said, spend it all every time, leave nothing in the vault. What a great
I love that.
Shoot the moon, baby. Don't hold
it's
back.
Hard. You know, it's hard. Okay, then, we're going to end soon, pretty soon, but I'm going to bring this up because, Jack, you're on the show naturally. That's what I'm doing here. Okay. You know, I wrote my Virginia series. The three stories, and I put them in a book, and fine. But I wrote it as Madison Montgomery, and then everybody said, oh, you're on the radio, you could, you know, you've done so many things, you need to be who you have to be, so I changed it to my name. And then since then, I can't write the Virginia book. I have notes and notes and notes. So I will be writing under Madison Montgomery again, because I can't write Virginia stories as me. I don't know why, but I can't. It's just the way it is, and I think other writers might have that, but...
Well,
and my children's book will be Marcia Cook, but I cannot write that way.
Yeah, okay. Well, maybe you've written her out now. You know, you don't need to do that anymore.
Well, no, I don't. I'm putting it back. I'm bringing her back.
Okay.
I'm as Madison. The author is Madison.
Yeah.
It's not me.
Marcia, how long are we here? Are we about ready to finish?
Yeah, we are going to be. We are about ready to end it. But, yes, we are. You have to leave right now because we are ending it at 4. You know, we can end. Do you have something to do?
No. I just wondered because, you know.
No, it's 4:52.
I had a couple more questions.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We can go.
I'm full of them today.
Well, right. You know, because. Right. And Jack, I think sometimes, you know, that when we have a guest on like Ellie, you know, that I think that we can have her on again with you because, you know, we're never done. That's the thing, you know, because there's always more.
I'd love to come back.
Okay, good. Good.
I have this thing that I've been working on for quite a while, and it sort of spins out of some work that Bob and I did. He wrote an essay that was in, like, Writers and something like this, you know, one of those national publications on what is a chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been
mm-hmm.
struggling with that for a long time. And I got to a question in my own writing about what is a paragraph. And I just always like to ask writers, okay, and you're both writers, so give me an answer. What is a chapter?
Oh, wow.
And what is a paragraph?
Mm. Jack, we should have ended the show, Jack.
if you're doing a story writing, a paragraph is perfect. In the first paragraph, you state the thing. In the second paragraph, you tell them what you're going to tell them. And then the third paragraph, you tell them what you told them. I started looking around at the way other writers handle paragraphs. And I do too.
I actually look at that, but I don't know the answer to that. Do you know? What is your? What do you think a paragraph is? What do you? Well, Ellie and I were kind of like going to ask you, what do you think a paragraph is?
Put it back to Jack.
Samuel Beckett and Malone dies, and some of his paragraphs are 875 words long. Some of them are 500 words long, And then you get this wonderful paragraph that's two words, what tedium, period, new paragraph.
Yeah,
so you
wow.
See, I mean, what is a paragraph?
I think it's a very difficult thing to figure out what goes in it.
In fiction. So, all right, Marcia, you don't want to tell me what you think a paragraph
I usually think, because I write, because I really consider myself more of a screenwriter, and that's actually how I do this, because that is what I see, and I do that because I did, and I edit myself out probably too much, but I do. And so that worries me, because if I put too much in, I'm so used to when you do that as a script, someone says, oh, no, you can't do that. You have to, like, make it short and just go right to the point and forget about it. But I know what you're saying, because I do see people that have very long, you know, they have very long paragraphs. And I'm thinking, well, maybe I cut mine too short. But then sometimes, like you're saying, I don't know that I have an answer to that. I know that I think about that when I'm doing the paragraphs, because I think, should this be in? And I'll tell you what I do. I have my editor, Jeff, he makes sure that I do it right, because I don't think so. All right,
Ellie, you've got time to listen to us now.
Okay, Ellie, sorry. You can blame Jack, because I don't ask questions like that. Go ahead, Ellie, blame Jack.
It's very hard. I would, well, for me, because I'm very intuitive, I believe I'm an intuitive writer, and I may be doing it all wrong, but I have a feeling of what needs to be in that. You're talking paragraph and chapter. A paragraph would be, and I don't know about first, second, or third paragraph. Oh, that is tough. Well, of course, I'm going to Google this after this. I'm going to find out. But I write intuitively. It's layer upon layer, and you know, my paintings are that way. How do I know when my painting is finished? How do I know when this is, you know, this layer of this, you know, the skin color of this portrait is correct or beautiful? I don't know. I think it's just a gut feeling.
And I'll ask a question then. Do you add, if you do a paragraph and you rewrite, if you're rereading it, you know, for yourself, I add to the paragraph sometimes, because I don't think it's complete enough.
I think if I read it out loud, it makes a big difference.
Yeah,
I think that really helps me. And I think I don't know if it's innate or whatever, but I think I know when something should be wrapped up, and there's, like you said, the hook at the end to lead you to the next chapter.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just going to say intuitive. I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm just going to say that when I go back, sometimes I think to myself, I don't think I have enough in this paragraph. It's not complete. And that, like you said, I don't know what complete is, though. That's what complete to everybody is probably different.
Yeah,
it is.
Well, this is one of the things that I'm trying to solve as a writer.
Well, I don't know if you can. I don't think you can.
Well,
that's
job as it is.
Yeah.
I've gone out on a limb,
okay.
And I'm taking a workshop on the paragraph.
that's why.
All right. And so I'm going to give you an example. I'm going to give you an example of how this thing, and this plugs directly into what Marcia was saying. I have a handout that I'm going to give. I just want to read you a piece of it.
Sure.
We saw that scripts they turn into movies are built on action and image. In other words, a movie is what the actors do and what the viewer sees. Mm-hmm. With that insight, Bob and I worked on a way to bring that precision and efficiency to novels. Novels, as you know, tend to be built on words, lots of words, lots and lots and lots of words, with images buried in black ink globs we think of as paragraph. And if there is action, it's tiny and not very important, unless you're writing an action war drug chase kind of movie. By contrast, screenwriters understand the close link between the poetic line and the script line.
Okay.
They want the eye to move down the page, image to image to action, not across those black, ink-rich paragraphs thick with exposition.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's where we're headed. All right.
Okay.
Anyway, so I'm going to teach this workshop, and if
oh,
I
good.
Fail, it's you guys' fault for not giving me. The
okay, I'll say what well, you're because you've written for the screen. You've written for the screen too, and that's why.
Oh, okay.
Because
okay.
once you write for the screen, it's a very different process.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
That's true.
Okay,
oh,
on that
wow.
note, we're not going to, on that note, we should say, we'll end this, we don't want your questions anymore, Jack. I'm tired, Jack, it's too much, this is a toughie.
Well, I want you guys to think about that and write me a 500-word essay.
Yeah, right. Oh, to be continued, to be continued.
Okay.
We'll be on it.
Right. Jack, you're
Thank
so thought-provoking.
You.
You're thought-provoking. All right, before we go,
Always.
Okay, Ellie, want to tell everybody where they can find you, and you will be back again, but where they can find you right now.
Okay, it's eleanorparkersapia.com. That's my website. And
there you
my
go.
Right. Yep, that's it.
That's right. Okay, then we got
thank
it. See, that
you.
Was short and sweet, right?
Yeah. Well,
okay.
I didn't think we had enough time, but thank you
no,
for
you
having me.
No, you have time. You have time. You have time. No, you have time.
Oh, that's
you have
okay. to
another,
it's
a, another place? Okay.
My writer's blog is The Writing Life.
Okay.
eparker.wordpress.com.
And you're so
thank
very
interesting. You.
It was a pleasure meeting you. It really was. I always
oh,
love the guests that Jack brings us on. Really, and definitely
thank
you'll be
you.
On. And I meant that about you know the book. Let's have find some authors and we'll have them on.
We will. Thank you so
and
much.
And we won't
thanks
tell Jack
me.
That. We won't tell Jack.
It's been fun, guys. Thank you. So
all right,
thank
Jack.
You.
Jack, one second, Jack. Where are we gonna? Where can we find you, Jack? Don't
oh,
get off that easy.
Okay. Adios, amigo.
All right. Well, Jack Remick. Jack, you can find Jack on his blog, and Jack is all. You just look up Jack Remick, and he's got pages.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
You
and
Marcia
Casper Cook, that's who I am, and I'm an author, and you can find me there, and worldofinknetwork.com. And if you have any questions or want to be on the show, just give me, you know, send me an email at World of Ink, and be happy to have you on. It's a good subject. All right. Thank you all, and have a great weekend coming up. It's Thursday. Everybody starts the weekend anyway on Thursday now. Friday, nobody works. So, good night. Goodbye. That's true,
good
though,
night.
Isn't it? You're laughing. You know that. The world has stopped now on Friday. All right. Thank you all. Take care.
Thank
Thanks
you.
For being on.
Bye-bye.
Jack, it's been great, Ellie. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.